Welcome back, everybody, to your favorite comic and pop culture podcast. It's the Cave of Solitude, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am Eric Anthony, and I'm joined by...
Daphne J.
Daphne J. And I think it's appropriate now, as it is in every show that we do, to let everybody know that you have a new alias, if you will. Would you agree?
Yeah.
All right. So, before we get into the show, as to talk about our main topic this week, which is a good one, we're going to get into some movie reviews. But Daph J has a personal Instagram account with a new moniker that she's going by. Go ahead and discuss it.
Okay, so I have this hobby. I like to take pictures, just like everybody. But
go ahead.
Well, I think I'm taking it seriously. So if anybody wants to view my page, it's Hazels, Hazels _ Eye. I have to think about that. Hazels _ Eye. That's where I post some of my, some
personal pics.
My personal photography. Of just nature, landscapes.
Places you've been.
Yeah. It's a hobby that I picked up and I think I'm liking it a lot. So if you want to view some pics, that's a page you might want to follow.
Follow Hazel's Eyes. And I gotta say, I may be biased, but you take nice photos.
Thank you.
I looked at your page and I gotta say, it is a pleasant page to follow. You put up some nice stuff. And if the Cave of Solitude can help you gain some followers, we're here to help.
It's appreciated.
As long as you post something to help Cave of Solitude gain more followers. I scratch your back, you scratch mine. But honestly, it's a good page and I'm happy you're enjoying it. Now, getting into the show, we've been going to the movies lately a lot. We've got a lot of movies that we've been seeing.
Well, now there's stuff to watch.
There's finally stuff to watch. So this episode, we're going to get into everybody's favorite spy.
James Bond.
James Bond. And people might have a distinction of who their favorite Bond is. We'll get into that. And then we're also going to discuss Mockingjay, the fourth
final installment
to the Hunger Games franchise. And I'm going to get Daph J's input on what she thinks of those movies. You'll get a little bit of mine. But before we do that, Daph J has a new segment that she would like to take care of. Take it away. Tell me what's happening news-wise in the geek culture, on the webs. What have you found?
Well, one of the things I came across was a newly released trailer for the Legends of Tomorrow.
Do you have a place you go to that you like to get your news from? Is there any particular...
Where I found this information from was from comicbook.com. Easy enough.
Yeah, it's true. It's easy to remember that.
So they had the trailer there, and I particularly liked that this trailer made reference to The Dark Knight.
Oh, brother. Here we go.
As well as The Man of Steel. So this is exciting to me because, as mentioned in the article... they are now introducing these two beings in the DC universe. In this universe, right? So that's gonna be cool.
What did you think of the trailer?
I like the trailer. I thought it was cool. I dislike the actors that play Captain Cold and Heat Wave. These prison break actors. Yeah. I feel that they're a little bit overdoing the acting, and it takes away from it, but, I mean, you can't have
show,
it all.
That show has a level of cheesiness, naturally, but I think that their overacting sometimes kills it for me. Personally, right. I'm not saying that they're not good characters.
I agree, and I think sometimes that takes away even from my wanting to follow The Flash. Because I think The Flash,
it's so good.
Yeah, you say that, but what I'm saying is it also carries that that fromage a little bit. And it takes away from the element. You know, when I read the comic books, when I read the comic book, it seems more substantial. It's, I know it's fictional and it's not real and it's all in my head, but it's presented in such a way that you buy it on paper, right? And when I see it portrayed differently on screen, it takes away from it.
Or do you think that it's too close to being like a comic book brought to life?
No. Maybe early comic books, like the 50s, 60s kind of thing.
Okay.
But not what I'm used to reading.
Okay.
So, and again, why bring these characters to life if then they're just gonna be ridiculous?
Okay, I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I take it with a grain of salt. I know that there's gonna be, like, Flash is, like, he's fighting gorillas and guys with freeze guns. And I think there's a certain level of cheesiness naturally that comes with it. But what I do like about the Flash television show is the relationships that are established. There's a lot of stuff within it that plays the heart chords, I think. For me, personally, I like the relationships that he has. So, as cheesy as it is, I feel like it stays grounded in that regard, where it can bring it back to an emotional level.
Yeah, but what I mean is, if it's not if the consistency isn't there, then it's the purity of the story trying to be told isn't... It's not right to me. I'm not saying I'm not going to give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it enough to, you know, like I said, I got a little excited, but I'll give it a try. See how it goes.
Fair enough. I think you've given it a fair shot. You've watched the first full season and a good portion of the second season. So if at this point you're not on board. You gave it a fair shot.
But Canary's going to be in it. So, which I remember you and I talking about, like, why would they bring...
Right.
Sarah back in the Arrow
right.
Seasons, like, that was kind of like a dead horse kind of situation where we've told the story, we know about the Lazarus Pit, why are we doing this again? But I suppose this was just so that we can be introduced to another character that can be played in a different place. So that's cool.
You want to do a roll call of the people that are going to be the characters that they're going to have in the show?
So I don't know the names of the actual actors, but I know Hawk Girl and Hawk Guy, Hawk Man, are gonna be in it.
Yeah.
White Canary. Mm-hmm. The Atom.
Yeah.
He's not dead.
Nope.
Spoilers. But he.
That didn't give it away. Trailer, right?
He's gonna be there. Arrow. Firestorm, is in it.
Firestorm, yeah.
Arrow, you spoke of Arrow.
Yeah.
Apparently, it looks like he'll be donning the goatee.
Oh, yeah, like the...
Yeah, the actual...
Really?
Ding.
That's about time.
Yeah, and when he makes an appearance in The Legends of Tomorrow, it seems like he's going to probably be rocking that goatee.
Do you think it's going to be an Arrow from a future time? Like a seasoned, established Arrow? Because it's...
Probably,
the show has time travel...
Right.
As a big element in it, which I think is... cool for me.
Yeah, and in this particular trailer, they do reference the fact that they go to the future. So it could very well be that this is a like you said, it's a seasoned, mature Arrow that now has wisdom and input to share. So I think that was going to be...
It's almost like a mini Justice League type of...
Probably.
I have a lot more faith in the DC television universe than I do in the movie universe thus far. I almost feel like they should just stick to TV.
I think they have room to explore in TV, on the small screen.
Yeah, I think...
Because if they get it wrong, if it's cheesy, it's forgivable. When you're trying to do a blockbuster, and, you know, it's... That's serious. Those are serious things. You can't mess with that.
You can lay groundwork more, too, on a television show. Because, like, The Flash, you really get into the... Or Arrow, or whoever the character is. You're allowing time to pass by. Like, every week you're telling an exciting new story. But over the course of 23 episodes, you can really give the characters some development and meat to their backstory, whereas in like a movie, even something like Man of Steel, it's an origin story, but in some ways you don't feel like you really got a good grasp of these characters. And it's a serialized medium in the first place, mm-hmm. the comic books are. Mm-hmm. So to see it episodic, I always feel does it better justice than just here's a movie and we're going to throw everybody we possibly can in it.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like you get the scope of the storytelling that way. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what Batman v Superman does. Here's hoping.
So excited for that
movie. I'm so excited. I don't want it to be so jammed with all these things are trying to establish that you don't get a good story out of it, you know?
It is a worry of mine. I mean, yeah. I am looking forward to it, but when they said it, you know, they were going to put Wonder Woman in it.
And I just hope it's done tastefully. You know, I can't see them putting her in for a cameo with all this hype and stuff.
Speaking of movies that are coming out.
Tell me.
There's a couple of movies in 2016 mm-hmm. that I am a little bit... I'm excited to see, and some I'm questioning.
Okay.
Did you know that they were making a Gambit movie?
Yes.
Do you know who's going to play Gambit?
Dance Boy, Channing Tatum.
I had to roll my eyes. I don't know. What are they? I don't know.
That's don't not know. Marvel, though. That's Fox. That's not Marvel Studios.
So it's going to be wrong.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know.
Do you
know.
Really have faith that this guy's going to do it?
I don't know. I have no interest. Personally,
I like the Gambit that was in the X-Men Origin Origin?
Yeah, the Wolverine Origin.
Yeah, what's his name here, that kid? He played some...
I don't remember his guy. Name off the top of my head. I could look it up for you.
Man, I just saw him not too long ago in another movie. But I like the way he played it. He had the accent down.
Did he have the accent?
He did. Remember. He had a little bit of a twang in his vocabulary.
I know that movie just, it didn't hit the mark, X-Men Origins.
No, but in regards to this particular character, I did like who they picked.
Taylor Kitsch, that's his name.
I'm not sure about the Chatham. Chatham.
Channing Tatum? Yeah. Is that his name?
I don't even know.
I think that is. But, okay.
That's a little disturbing to me. That comes out October 7th.
Okay.
Suicide Squad, also coming out.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be good.
This is August 5th we're talking about. Yes. The new year.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to the fact that this is a movie coming from a complete different direction. It's concentrated on the other side of the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely different spectrum altogether. But I don't like the Joker. He looks a little too not what we grew up with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think to an extent they have to make the Joker completely different each time it's portrayed by a different actor, because I think each time, whether it's the 66 Batman, whether it's Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, they leave such an indelible mark on the Joker after they've played it that you can't get their version of it out of your head. So to kind of... if someone were to play the Joker again, you're almost imagining who's going to do Heath Ledger.
See, the thing with the Joker is that I find... yeah, he's maniacal, we know that. But I find that the way... from what I see in the pictures,
mm-hmm.
as crazy as the Joker is, he's smart. This Joker looks like he's more just, it's just madness. It's just chaos. There's no thinking process. It's just a mess. But that's one opinion of many. And again, when you compare something that you've known all your life, it's hard to swallow.
I think that's the thing, right? Is that you have in your mind what you think that character is or should be, that when you see a version of what it... like, there's so many different ways that these characters have been written and portrayed that if you look at the most recent version of the Joker, it kind of fits what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, it's just a matter of kind of going with the flow. And if truth is, a lot of people aren't going to like it. It's like Man of Steel, right? So many people have a problem with Man of Steel, the movie, because it's not the Superman that they wanted or that they know or that they think it should be. So people are going to pick apart and have, this is not Superman,
or this is a Joker. But he's still recognizable. They didn't slap, you know, they didn't do his hair different. He was still clean looking. He was still the hero that you wanted to see. He had a different costume. It was a little bit darker, but he was recognizable. This guy, he just looks like...
But if he plays the Joker the way you know the Joker to be, you might forget about how he looks.
Probably.
So I think you have to wait and see.
So you're excited about that one?
I'm excited for Suicide Squad because I think it's something new that I don't know what to expect. Kind of like what I dealt with the Guardians. It's not the same type of movie at all. But I like the concept of bringing different characters into the universe and intertwining the, you know, Batman's going to be in it. I'm excited to see how that works. It's just a new way to tell these stories that DC hasn't done yet. So I want to see if they succeed at it.
Is that... because I always confuse this. Is that DC... No, wait. Marvel Studios is one thing. This is
Warner Brothers.
This is Warner Brothers. So yeah. It's going to be true to what we know. It's not some hack just making up a story from this.
No, they're combining this with... all of the movies, this is going to be part of its continuity. So Ben Affleck is going to be in Suicide Squad.
And they filmed a part of that in Toronto, that's right. Actually.
That's right.
Another movie that I'm underwhelmed with, but I think I'll go watch it just because. There's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 coming out.
Interesting. I didn't like the first one.
But you know how you kind of... It's like reading a bad book. Or like you said, like it's like reading a series...
you can't help yourself.
Of not series, what's the word? Single issues. Mm-hmm. There's 13 issues or whatnot, and yeah. You know it's going in the wrong direction, but you just can't stop.
You gotta see it through. Yeah. Hoping, it'll... I have a feeling it'll get good, but you just... Yeah, I know. I know what you mean.
Because, you know, sometimes the sequel can be better than the first one.
Yeah.
But, I don't think I'll be running to the theater for that, but no. It's out there. It's going to be playing June 3rd.
In 2016?
Yeah.
That's quick. Okay.
I know. Maybe that's not a good... It's not a good...
I guess they figure we can make a certain amount of money with this. Let's do it.
Those are the three that are coming out that I'm not quite excited about.
You're not excited for Suicide Squad.
Like I said, it's a... whole other entity that I'm not familiar with. So okay. It's not that I'm not excited. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'm pleasantly surprised.
Well, you got Deadshot in it. You know who Deadshot is. You got Harley Quinn. You got Joker's going to be in it. Batman's going to be in it. I mean, Batman's going to be in it. How are you not excited to go see a movie that Batman's going to be in?
Yeah, but like I said, it's revolving around this group of people. It's not watching war... You know, the Justice League, the war animated movie where you see the team come together to bring down this one common enemy. This is now being focused on these group of people that you only ever see them do bad things. Are they going to only do bad, horrific things? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm really, really, really excited for Captain America.
Yeah.
That Civil War.
Yeah.
I'm really pumped for that.
It's almost an Avengers movie.
Well, it picks up, apparently, it picks up where Age of Ultron left off.
Right.
So, because I read Civil War, I think that was one of my first Marvel. That was your first Marvel
comics you've read, that's right. Yeah.
And that one, that we had a heated conversation.
Yeah, it was good.
That
was
about good. That. And I'm looking forward to that story being told on the big screen.
It's going to be interesting to see how they go about the third phase of the Marvel movies because from what I've read and I've heard is that they've now, the guys who actually work for Marvel Comics are no longer going to be part of the creative process of the cinematic universe. They're not part of that team anymore. There was like a little council that they would have that they were all in on what should
Well, that doesn't sound good.
That's why I'm saying it'll be interesting to see how they go about it. It's still going to be the same producer, Kevin Feige. I think that's how you say his name. People debate it all the time. He's produced them all. So thus far, they've done everything pretty much right. Right? Depending on what your tastes are. Maybe you didn't like Thor. Maybe you didn't like Ant-Man. Whatever. But they've connected everything really well. But I think a big part of it is because of the brain trust that they had of people knowing the characters that are part of the creative side of Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. To be like, here's a way that you can incorporate this storyline, adapt it, and make the changes you need to stay true to what these characters are. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully it's as good as it's been. But I think Civil War will be a good one. I trust that.
What do you think about X-Men Apocalypse?
I really like Days of Future Past. So if they're going in that direction, it'll be interesting to see. But I think it's a story that takes place. It's like kind of like a prequel, but not in the way of First Class. This story is going to take place in the 80s. So it'll be like a younger X-Men team that you know.
Okay. So what we know with X-Men... So they did this last one to undo everything that to clean it up.
Yeah. To kind of restart the franchise. And
but so this new one is not picking up from that. It's telling the story before?
I think so.
All right, I'm confused, but okay.
Yeah, X-Men comics it could be really confusing. This storyline was really popular in the 90s. What it was the past had been changed by Apocalypse, this character, and he kind of undid everybody's story, everybody's history. So people who were together or storylines that did happen somewhere in the past, the timeline shifted. So everything that you thought had happened, it went into this alternate reality. It was called the Age of Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. So they did like about a year's worth of X-Men stories with this other timeline, making all the readers really believe like, wow, they've really changed everything because of this timeline event, because it was disturbed by Apocalypse. So I think they're going to kind of incorporate that into what they can now, because X-Men has kind of restarted, so they can tell stories that didn't happen before but now have happened. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
No.
It's still confusing.
But okay. That being said, Captain America comes out apparently May 6th, and then later on in that month, on the 27th, Apocalypse comes out. So that's going to be a big month. So is, yeah.
And
TMNT comes
March
out,
March
25th? In March, the date, like, the world stops turning on that
I day. Think the world stops turning on December 18th. I think the world will stop turning.
This is true.
I don't think any of those other movies that are going to come out will eclipse what is about to happen with Star Wars. It's already sold out in our area.
I have to say, when I see the trailer, I get a little tickle in my nose. I get a little emotional. Of course. I think you're right. That's a big
thing. That's going to stop everything. Okay, so before we get completely lost in movie news and things that are going to come up, we can start talking about Star Wars. We'll never end. Let's get into our main topic for today. We're going to try to do two movie reviews. I know it seems like a lot, but we'll keep it concise as best as we can. Nice, succinct movie reviews without spoiling anything, and then we'll get each other's take on it. So starting with Bond, Spectre. The fourth installment in the Daniel Craig era of being James Bond. Have you liked Daniel Craig thus far as James Bond? Are you a Bond fan? Fan? Not fan.
am I a Bond fan? I think so. I am a Bond fan. My favorite one that he's been in was Casino Royale. Yeah. I do not like his duck face. Yeah. It's annoying to me. But I think he did well taking on that role. It's a very iconic role.
Yeah.
And it takes a special person to be able to do it.
Yeah, definitely a physical role.
Yeah. particularly this flick, I wasn't impressed.
Okay. It's been getting a mixed batch of reviews. It's kind of like, some people say some Bond fans really like it. Other people are like, nah, I was underwhelmed. Here's the plot, a quick plot synopsis from IMDb. A cryptic message from Bond's past sends him on a trail to uncover a sinister organization. While M battles political forces to keep the Secret Service alive, Bond peels back the layers of deceit to reveal the terrible truth behind Spectre. Directed by Sam Mendes, who, if I'm not mistaken, did Skyfall, which was a really strong Bond movie. And it had a decent opening weekend. It was $70 million opening weekend on November 6th, which is good numbers for a franchise that has 26, 27 movies at this point. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, it's tons of them.
Tons of them. So, tell me why you were underwhelmed with Spectre yourself.
I feel like they were just reaching at this point. I don't think there was real substance, although they've... spoilers. Although they've tied in all of the other Bond movies that he played into this final film, I don't think it was necessary. And there was no dialogue.
It wasn't much, right?
No, it was just... don't get me wrong, it was entertaining, there was some nice scenes, but there was nothing... I didn't find it to be intelligent. It was kind of just...
That's funny you should say that.
It's like, I've seen this before, we've done this before, and you just came up with... you just picked a reason out of thin air just to do what was done already. I thought it lacked... And I don't know, I mean, to me, isn't he supposed to be like... smart.
Bond.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's dumb. I'm just saying, like, for example, Batman. He is a detective. He deduces. He problem solves. He follows trails. And Bond somewhat does that. He has to piece things together. But I found that even when that was happening within the film, I didn't even know what was going on. We were probably like an hour and a bit in, and I was still trying to figure out what he was after. Why he was at certain places with certain people. It was almost where you were at the end, all of a sudden things start fitting into place. And maybe that was done on purpose. I'm sure it was, but I didn't find myself enjoying the movie because I was just trying to keep up.
You were kind of disconnected.
Yeah, my brain was hurting. And nobody was saying anything for me to even know what was going on.
Yeah.
And so once we got there, it's like, that's it. That's the big reveal.
Okay, so you weren't like, oh, that's awesome. It didn't, like, take you.
No, I mean, I had a feeling again with the intro of the movie when they start showing certain clips from the previous films. Mm-hmm. You have an idea that, okay, some things will come back, but to the scope that it did, it was kind of like, well, it didn't really have to go that far back. Like, you just made up a story to make another movie just for fun. And, okay, yeah, movies are for fun, but it's like you retold the story. No wonder he was so ticked about making this.
I think he actually, I listened to a podcast with him recently on The Nerdist, and he had actually said that if he was going to come back, he wanted to have a little bit of say in how and what the movie would be like. So I think he actually had a little bit of say in the direction that the movie would go, because
I'm sorry to interrupt you, he did, but him and the director were butting heads because they weren't going in the same direction. So what you're saying is accurate, but I also read that him and the director were not seeing things eye to eye. And he wasn't particularly pleased with how this character is portrayed. I mean, everybody knows that Bond is a womanizer, but he doesn't like the character that he has to play. He'd rather slit his wrist, quote unquote.
I think that was something that the media, during some of the press tours, in listening to him on the podcast that just came out last week, they were asking him what he sees in common with him. Like, what does he have in common with Bond?
He said nothing.
And he's like, I don't have anything in common with him. I'm Daniel Craig. I'm an actor. This guy's a spy who has a license to kill. Like, what makes you think I have anything in common with him? I'm married with children. Like, So people kind of, they want to see in the actor that they kind of can't separate the fact that this guy isn't the character he's playing. You know, they kind of expect him to be a little bit of James Bond in real life.
I think they expect him to be excited for being able to play this iconic role, but he wasn't exactly thrilled. He didn't hold back from telling them what he felt. So it kind of sounded at first, when I first heard the backlash, it kind of sounded like he was biting the hand that fed him all these years. But I get it. Like, you don't always just want to be compared to this one person that you don't have any
connection
with.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Especially if morally you're against his way of doing stuff. Like, that's not you. And when people try to peg you as that, or see that there's some kind of connection, I can see. And if it's repetitive, like at those junkets where it's back to back to back and you're answering the same questions over and over again, I'd snap.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of what he has said about it has been a little bit blown up, over the top. And I think it's, to be honest, from his explanation, it's a long process to make these movies. It's not a couple week shoot. It's a lot of physicality, a lot of, like, him and David Bautista, for some of the scenes that they were in together, who plays one of the villains, they were 6 weeks rehearsing it. Mm-hmm. Just that one scene that they have on the train together.
I mean, that's a part of the job, too.
It is a part of the job.
You get paid the big bucks to
do it. You do. But to be away from your family for that long, at some point, it's like, okay, I'm done doing this 8 months away, filming this movie for my family. I want to just get back. I could do a movie and still make my living that takes 6 weeks to film. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I get his relief of being finished with the franchise, if he is indeed finished. But what this movie did purposely was bring back slowly some of the elements of classic James Bond, and he said that he wanted to do that. They wanted to introduce it slowly, the watches that actually do something, as opposed to just him having product placement. He said, if I'm gonna wear a watch, I want the watch to actually do something. The car actually had, you know, a function that he uses in the movie. All these little James Bond tropes that were taken away from Casino Royale. They made it kind of real world.
Well, I think that's also appeals to the fan base, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what James Bond is.
Bring him back in. You know, use Moneypenny as part of your story. Mm-hmm. Use M in your storyline again. Q, who hasn't really played a significant role in the Daniel Craig movies, where in all the other ones, he always goes to visit Q to get him, you know, his latest gadgets, his latest toys to use in the movie. So they brought all of those elements back into this one.
I felt that they did, yes, you're right, they did that, but I felt they limited how much they did that.
They didn't do it in a crazy way.
Like, you barely saw Moneypenny. You didn't see her. You saw her in the beginning. He called her on the phone, and then she showed up at the end.
Yeah, she had elements throughout it that she was utilized, which I think is kind of like an old James Bond type of thing. I like the action scenes. I felt they were a little bit more fantastic in scope than the other James Bond movies that with Daniel Craig in them. Some of the stunts that were done, the plane scene, the stuff on the train, but that was kind of classic Bond in its usage. I liked the movie, but like you said, I felt that it was force-feeding, tying all four of them in together, where you're like, really? That's the explanation for everything, is that's how it happened? And you get it as like a storytelling plot element, but I felt like, as much as I like the introduction of the villain that is included in this movie, Blofeld, who's the classic Bond villain, who they've Austin Powers basically made fun of with Dr. Evil, right? That's the one that they're farcing. I did like all of those things, but I thought the movie was really, really dark and throughout it. I felt like you said there wasn't much dialogue, and at some points I felt like, what is it that they're really going after? Mm-hmm. I don't really feel, you felt it, but you kind of, I didn't get it mm-hmm. for a large portion of the movie. And the romantic relationship that he develops, I don't think it had enough development for it to have the impact mm-hmm. that it ends up having. Mm-hmm. That's my take. So for entertainment purposes, going to the movies, popcorn movie, Bond film, I would give this a 7 out of 10 mm-hmm. for my movie going experience, enjoyment of it. The way I would rank them would be Casino Royale, Skyfall, this one, and then Quantum of Solace. I put at the bottom. I like this one better than Quantum of Solace.
Okay.
Do you remember Quantum of Solace at all? That's the one where he's with it's the one right after Casino Royale. I find it even a little bit hard to remember how to explain the plot, but it's the direct continuation of it.
All right. Well, I give it a 6.
Yeah.
6.5, maybe.
6.5.
And the only one I like is Casino Royale.
That's it? You didn't like Skyfall?
Ah, Skyfall. What is Skyfall? I forget again.
Skyfall is the one with Javier Bardem as the villain who is going after M.
Oh, he has the metal jaw.
Yeah, the face is all
crooked. And he kills M. Did you just say that?
He goes after her, but...
you
can spoil it.
yeah.
I thought it was a good film.
Yeah, but that one's alright.
It has its plot holes.
Right. Didn't he go to Japan or something in that one? No.
I think Hong Kong.
Okay.
It has some plot holes that really, really bother me, but that's for another episode.
Yeah. No, Casino Royale, and my favorite scene in that movie is when he's playing the cards. Yeah. That's just classic.
I think everybody.
Classy. That's just chic. That's gentlemanly. That's everything.
After having to kill a couple people in between breaks.
Yeah. Coming back. And then resuscitate himself. That's a bomb. That's a bomb scene.
Yeah, it was that was a good movie.
Next one.
Okay. So this weekend, the fourth installment to the Hunger Games movie, the concluding one. Both of these movies are fourth and supposedly final for not the franchise of James Bond, but for Daniel Craig, possibly.
Actually, if you don't mind, before we move on to the next segment here.
Okay.
Since now the Bond character, the Daniel is done, who do you see being the next James Bond?
If they continue with the continuity of James Bond, if they say this is the final James Bond story of this installment, like these four are its own world, this was what he did, and that's it, I would like to see it picked up with Idris Elba mm-hmm. as playing James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Put in a new look, new storyline completely, keeping someone who's a gentleman, someone who has the physicality, the mature look, but you also know can be that spy.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting. I wouldn't want them to make us, to treat us like we're stupid, and he's supposedly continuing the storyline of this James Bond.
Right.
I'd want it to be a new story.
Fresh, yeah.
Fresh.
Yeah.
If it were to continue, I don't know. I always see Hugh Jackman being a good Bond.
I think they should put it to rest and just start fresh.
I think they should start fresh. And if they don't go with Idris Elba, I could see Tom Hardy being James Bond.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think he would be a good James Bond.
Yeah, he played Bane.
He played Bane, yes.
Just in case nobody knows.
He played a spy in, I think it was Spy vs. Spy. I think that's what the movie was called. With Reese Witherspoon and I think Chris Pine.
He was in Inception.
Yeah, he was in Inception.
So you know he can move in a jacket.
I think he would make a great James
in
a Bond.
Jacket.
I think he would make a great James Bond.
Yeah, that's good.
Those are my picks. How about yourself?
I thought Idris Elba too, and I think mostly because we've had this discussion.
You leave the movie theater and you already automatically ask it, right?
But if I were to take it elsewhere, I think I would actually like. I think. I think he's an underrated actor, personally. But I think Liev Schreiber would be a good James Bond, too. That's something about that guy. Like, he can take on...
That's a good pick.
Different roles, and he executes them really well.
He played a spy type of character in Salt.
With Angelina Jolie.
I think he could do it. I think he could pull it off.
I think he has the look. I think he can deal with the physicality situation. He has that... I think he could do it.
I think you're right. I think he'd make a good Bond. Going back to Hugh Jackman, I think he was offered the job and he rejected it.
Oh.
So I don't think that will ever happen. Hmm. It is a big responsibility to take on a role like that. It takes a toll on you.
Well, it's not like they haven't done that type of work before. I mean, look, they both... Hugh Jackman took on Wolverine, and then Liev Schreiber took on Sabretooth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been there, done that. It's not something that they're incapable of doing. So I think he would be a good pick.
And I think Daniel Craig has really opened the doors of there being someone with a different look to be James Bond.
Yeah. I think his character at first was a little...
Oh, yeah. People criticized. Had a lot of backlash because he's blue-eyed Bond, different. So, a blonde guy... But he, in my books, is my favorite that I've seen. I didn't grow up in the Sean Connery era, but I like the way he portrayed the character and the stories that were told.
Right.
Okay. Moving on to Mockingjay. Hunger Games, Part 4, the final concluding chapter. What did it do? Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the series? Did you like the conclusion?
I enjoyed the series. I don't like the ending.
Okay.
Although I know that was the goal for everyone, and that's what you want to see. You want to see a happy ending, I guess. You want to see the work that's been put in. What's the word? Rewarded?
The payoff? Yeah.
It was a lull. I was bored at the end.
Just left you empty?
Yeah, I was kind of like, that's it? We're done? And you know, this is what we wanted, but not like that. It just didn't make sense to me. I didn't find her relationship with PETA to be... conclusive. There was too many things up in the air. You don't go through that kind of trauma and you're okay.
Yeah.
You don't just go to bed with a guy that wants to take you out just like that.
Yeah.
It felt unfinished. And maybe because of limited time, you can only tell so much of a story.
They broke it up in two movies though.
This is true. You bring up a good point. But even yet, it just seemed undone. Huh. Or just slow.
And it's interesting you say that because it follows the accuracy of the book pretty closely. I think I've said this in the past, but the Hunger Games movie series has really done the book's justice in adapting itself to the screen.
Well, I've never read the series myself, but I have heard from multiple people that the final installment was their least favorite. And yeah. I think that happens after a while, where you're just telling a story and you're on this, you reach a peak and then you don't know where to go.
Yeah.
You know, you've hit the ceiling. And that's probably what happened. I know a lot of people are unhappy with how things unraveled. I did know that her sister was going to be killed.
Spoilers.
And so, that's annoying.
We should have said spoilers before, but it's okay.
Well, we can edit it. Anyway. It was like, well, you all of this started because you were trying to avoid this from happening, and it happened anyway. And it's like, well, why did...
I think that's part of the impact of the storytelling, though, right? Is to everything that she fought for, it's gonna hit her hard because she's gonna suffer a loss, and I think that's what the author tried to do to make the third story hit you hard.
Which again, I like it because it's not the expected thing, because mm-hmm. life isn't like that. Life throws you curveballs, and you deal. But like I said, the reason why this even started was so that she could avoid that from happening. That's what I'm saying.
But that's what helped her to... That's what also helped her to come to her decision at the end of the movie when a new government is put in place. I think it was kind of necessary for that to happen for Katniss to have that revelation, to have that... to realize that this is just a vicious cycle that I've got to put an end to. Mm-hmm. Because I think it was... She was purposely placed there, hoping to get a reaction out of Katniss later on, once that new government is put into place, so that Katniss would be on board with certain things that the new president would want to put in place all over again. But Katniss saw...
Beyond
that, because of little
that tips, manipulation.
The little tips that she was getting, and she had been under manipulation for so long. So when I read the book, I didn't like it. It was my least favorite of the three of the trilogy. It had its moments that I liked, but it like you said, it left me a little bit empty. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I almost felt like, well, how else could this end? There wasn't another way for this to end.
And that's what I mean. It's just, you know what? I think I was hoping for more gratification.
And I think that's what kind of makes... I think that kind of makes the books have a shelf life. Or it hits you a little bit harder in the sense that it didn't end the way... I didn't know how it was going to end, but it didn't leave me feeling... with this victorious, like, and that's like, I was exactly. like, we won. Exactly. But when I think about it, she did everything that happened is the best way that it could have happened ultimately, because it left an impact. Her final decision when they decide to execute President Snow, spoilers, they do the alliance, the Rebel Alliance, I was going to call it, but the Rebels do win. Her decision at that point in time, to show which side she was had allegiance to or did not have allegiance to, I felt had made more of a statement. It made more impact as to what she stood for and was truer to her character throughout the whole movies than and the books. Then when you read it, you might have felt like, mom, it was satisfying when you kind of look back and think of it. Like I said, the third book was my least favorite of the three. So the last two installments are my least favorite of mm-hmm. the four. Mm-hmm. But it was cool to see it end on... It was a good movie. I felt it... I liked it better than The Last Mockingjay. I felt there was a little bit more action, a little bit more suspense.
Oh, tons of suspense.
The stakes were high. It kept you intrigued.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
My favorite scene was... Spoilers. When... I think I like being scared.
You definitely like being scared.
I may have screamed a couple of times in the theater. But, when they're trying to maneuver, trying to get, I guess, to the palace or to the house of the president, it's like a Hunger Games all over again, just...
Real world.
Just real world, and the obstacles that they have to face to get there. It is a edge-of-your-seat movie. There is suspense, and when there's things that are coming at you in a tunnel,
crazy. Yeah, you feel it. You definitely you're feeling that, especially because it's so enclosed.
Yeah,
and it's like you don't know where you can. There isn't an open space to run to in those scenes. What did you think of the look of the Hunger Games movies? The way that everything looks and feels, and because it takes place sometime in the future, so. Not just so much the story now. Let's get into the actual making of this film, the acting, the screenplay, the way it looked. How did you feel about people's performances and all that kind of stuff? Because this one has dialogue.
Yeah.
As opposed to Spectre.
It was good. But like I said, and this is not anything, it's not a backlash, but again, I think with trilogies, you got to be careful with things being repetitive. Like I said, there was still booby traps. It's still suspenseful. It's still entertaining. It's still fun, but we've done this before. Yeah. So it's like, all right, so we're doing it again. Yeah. And again, that's okay, but it's a story that's already been told. So I like the acting.
Jennifer Lawrence performs so well in all of her films. Like, even, like, I see the other movies that are in the same vein or genre as Hunger Games. Like, I see Divergent and Maze Runner and all that stuff. And I haven't seen Divergent to judge it fairly. It just doesn't look as captivating to me. I don't know. It kind of has that Twilight feel. I guess Hunger Games does too, but I just feel it's more of its, out of the genre of the movies that are coming out, I feel like Hunger Games is more of the original one.
I feel like exactly. You know what I mean? There's a bit of a more authenticity to that series versus other ones that are comparable to it.
And some would argue that Hunger Games takes from the Japanese Battle Royale book, mm-hmm. which came before it, which is a valid argument to make. But from an American point of view, these books and authors and movies that are coming from American creators, mm-hmm. I don't know, I have a partiality towards Hunger Games,
mm-hmm. but I bought the act. I think Sutherland, Donald Sutherland,
he really bought into that character.
Man, he was great in all of. He was those a great movies. Choice,
and he actually. In the first DVD set, he wrote a letter to the director or to the producers of the movie, really expressing his vision of how he's going to play this character and what it all represented. So I think he really bought into playing this character with all he had.
But without, what I liked about his character and the way he portrayed it, without being evil, like, for example, with that Joker that we were talking about before, he physically looks like a crazy psychopath. Yeah, yeah. This guy, clean, looks like he talks with a very calm, soothing voice. He reasons with you, and he can almost make you believe what he wants.
Never shows anger.
Never.
Yeah.
And those are the cycles that you need to steer clear from.
Right.
And that's what made him even more evil to me. Because he didn't seem like he was one to lose his cool.
Yeah, very calculated. But
he was insane.
Yeah.
And the thirst for power he was maniacal, I think. But without it being so obvious, right? Which is a talent, really.
Yeah.
And a weapon. So I think his the way he acted in all those films, he was scary without looking it.
Yeah.
I liked his role.
Yeah. I found it interesting how both movies that we just spoke about dealt with government trying to, that theme of surveillance. Mm-hmm. Making sure that everything is seen by the government on their end, but also being very calculated in what they show to everybody. Mm. And it's definitely a commentary of what you see today on the news, right?
Absolutely.
Especially with everything that's happened recently in the world with certain attacks. It hits home a little bit to make you start to feel this would be necessary. And we kind of get a thirst for, not a thirst for blood per se, I don't want to say that, but you wouldn't mind seeing the people who you think are the ones that are the bad guys, for instance, the ones who wreak terror.
Get theirs.
Almost in the sense, like, you know what? I want to put those guys in an arena who did this to all these innocent people and disturbed their life or this city, and see them all have this happen to them. It's funny how we can become conditioned.
So just to be clear, it's not your personal opinion. No. But you're saying that the world then is conditioned to see or feel a certain way because of...
Yeah, they're being watched to a certain extent, almost like the surveillance issue that you see in the Bond movie and in Hunger Games, how everyone's kind of monitored and controlled, and but then at the same time what they're shown. Mm-hmm. And how what they're shown leads people to feel this is what has to be done. We have no choice. We need to have this much monitoring done to us. It occurred to me how both of these movies kind of very closely in their release to each other and in things that are happening in real life kind of hit home a little bit. And as fantastic and ridiculous as the Hunger Games concept is, it's not that far off when you think about it in a commentary way. Like, yeah, it's crazy to put kids in an arena so that they would do this to remember the Civil War that we once fought. But when you see government change hands and people go from the idea of if we put this person there and defeat what's in place, it will be better. It never really becomes better. It's just the same cycle mm-hmm. of things that happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just a coincidence, I guess, that both of these movies have that underlying theme mm-hmm. in a way. I know James Bond is in no way has much depth to it other than being an action movie, but which one did you like better between Mockingjay and Spectre?
Mockingjay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you want to own the set of the Hunger Games?
Well, I'm a completist. I have to. We have the other ones. We gotta have that one.
You're a completist?
Yeah.
Well, how come you don't own Batman and Robin?
Okay, no, that's a whole...
Okay, that's a whole other episode.
No, I'm not going to go there.
Would you be interested in watching Divergent?
No.
Not at all.
There's nothing, but I've seen the previews, and even when I'm in that frame of mind of like, okay, we're going to watch this movie with this type of...
setting, plot, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's never spoken to me. I just felt like it was a secondhand Hunger Games. That's how I took it.
Yeah.
It's like this is the response to the Hunger Games. Another studio trying to put their hat in the pot. Mm-hmm. Hunger Games made $100 million opening weekend. And it's the lowest out of the four. Which...
just like the book.
Yeah. Which is nothing to bat an eyelash to as far as the money that it made. Right, that's big money. That's big box office success. $100 million, but that's your lowest. So I mean, Jennifer Lawrence, everything she's been a part of, pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. For this to be the lowest opening weekend of the four Hunger Games, but it's done now. You happy with it all? Would you say that you would recommend the series to somebody?
Yeah.
Which was your favorite of the four?
I like the second one, and then the first one.
Okay, cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
That you, most people always, oh, the first one's always the best. I like that you picked the second one. Yeah. That's a good change. What was it about the second one that you liked?
I liked the character development of certain ones. Not knowing that they were in cahoots with the good guys to actually protect her.
Yeah.
Because especially, you know, you're only rooting and hoping that she's gonna survive when you know everyone's gunning for her.
Right.
But it was a complete twist from the original.
Okay, yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean? Yes. Everyone's trying to kill her. In the second one, you think the idea is gonna be the same, but it had a good twist.
Yeah. It was definitely a really good follow-up for a book and a movie.
Yeah.
Favorite character?
Finnick.
That's your favorite?
Yeah, I like him.
Okay.
He was such a douche in the beginning, and then when he turned, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, got it. You can
get behind him.
Yeah. I like Finnick, and I like Gale.
And who would you have preferred her to end up with?
Gail.
Not a pedophile.
Hands down. No. 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 He annoyed me from the beginning. But having had discussions as to why she had, I guess, an emotional attachment with him, I understand why that developed. But there's something, maybe I'm speaking from a biased standpoint, but there's something about your childhood love. I mean, that never goes away. It's so deep-rooted. And I understand the trauma that she experienced with Peter. I refuse to call him Peter.
I like that.
I understand that they experienced something that only them two can feel.
Yeah.
That's a whole other separate thing that they share, but
it's hard to say, right? Because you suffer with a person that you go through the trenches with, that you can never compare that or share that experience with another human. But then, like you said, Gail and her were feeding their families together. Yeah. back in district.
Yeah, and it wasn't that 12, he just, right? Cared for her. He cared for her family. Like
that, it was a two-way street.
Absolutely. But you saw more of that, at least from what I see in the films. I don't know what it was in the book, but you saw more of that coming from him.
Yeah.
Him caring for the mother and the sister. Yeah. When she was there and then when she was absent.
The love triangle thing in the book always kind of annoyed me. And not even because, like, I was
And honestly, she was like a floozy.
A floozy.
No, seriously.
It was kind of annoying.
She was locking lips with one guy, then she went to kiss another, and she just seemed all
over the place. It was the one thing for me that the chemistry between her and the actors, it never felt believable that she would be with either of them. Like, I didn't buy the romance on either.
Maybe it was done on purpose.
It was, because it feels like that in the book, too.
Right.
So I don't think it was a Jennifer Lawrence not being able to sell it. It was more like, yeah, she really showed that she doesn't know who she loves or why she loves them.
Mm-hmm.
Which was always something annoying for me in the story to begin with.
Well, yeah, that's an annoying trait to begin with. Like, who wants to deal with that?
Well, Hunger Games is complete, but a new universe will start all over again next month. With the Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The Force Will Awaken. And I am excited about that whole franchise getting another breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
You think it will be good? You think it will be what everyone's saying it will be?
I hope.
You have a new hope, as it were.
I don't want it to be a letdown.
I don't think it will be.
But see, the first three, the episode 1 through 3.
This is that those.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Everyone was pumped, and look at what happened. So, this one I have a little bit more faith in it.
There's no Jar Jar Binks this time.
And everyone's coming back that we know.
Yeah.
You know, Harrison Ford.
Chewie.
Chewie's there. As Princess Leia.
Yeah.
They're reprising these roles, and that's kind of keeping my hope alive. So, I'm looking forward to it.
We should do a Star Wars trilogy podcast.
Do I have to be there for 1 through 3? Because I'm not going to do that.
No, we're not going to do those ones. The trilogy.
The trilogy. Okay, the 6. Original trilogy.
Yes,
okay.
Leading up into Force Awakens.
Yeah, okay.
Sound like a plan?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. All right, folks. Thank you for listening to our extended movie review and news that Daphne J introduced at the beginning of the show. We had a lot of fun being here with you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. If you're looking for Star Wars comics to catch up on and get you pumped up for the movie that's coming out in less than a month now, you go to Cyber City Comics in North York on Bathurst and Steeles area. More specifically, Steeles and Carpenter Road. You go there. Daryl's there. Cyber City Comics. You got your Star Wars Vader, Star Wars Darth Vader, Princess Leia, all of them are there.
They also carry some Sesame Street products.
Which has nothing to do with Star Wars.
They were just there, and I saw Snuffleupagus.
Oh, boy.
I saw a Stuffy Snuffleupagus. And I was just like, huh? But I guess...
Who doesn't like Sesame Street?
I guess to entertain the masses...
You gotta have it all.
You gotta have it all.
All right, folks. This is Eric Anthony signing off.
Daphne J.
Don't forget to sign up to follow Hazel Eyes. Hazel's Eye.
Hazel's underscore Eye.
There you go, on Instagram. And you can give us your reviews of the movies at caveofsolitude.outlook.com or visit us at caveofsolitude.com. See you guys soon.